Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting to order on Monday, December the 16th. Roll call, please.
Trustee Barry.
Here.
DeCarl.
Here.
DeSmit.
Here.
Sias here. Olson.
Here.
Boyer.
Here.
Daney.
Here. Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to also take a moment, please, just a moment of silence to try to understand what is happening in this world with all of this violence and for the poor children and families affected in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you. Any town hall?
No.
Okay, so our agenda, we're starting with our space needs assessment survey.
And tonight I'm gonna bring Ed Sullivan and his colleague up to discuss the survey process. I believe it's Rich Carter. Welcome and thank you for coming out tonight. I appreciate it. I know you've been busy with a lot of your recent elections and stuff, so it's nice to have you here with us tonight.
No worries. We're happy to be here. So the survey process is one that we've had a good discussion with Carolyn and Mallory a couple weeks ago to kind of talk about, you know, what are you looking for? What is the goal? And that's ultimately what we're trying to figure out, is what is the goal of the library? And so we talked about some needs, some space needs, some layouts, and so ultimately what we're doing is we're building a group of individual menu items that some programmatic ideas and how the spaces revolve around those ideas. And so I think you all have received the, there's 11 individual, potential individual projects. And so we kind of go through and talk about, all right, if you have program spaces, what are the advantages? Obviously additional and larger spaces for programming activities, allowing more programming to fulfill community's wishes. Disadvantages, cannot achieve without expansion, and then a cost estimate. And obviously we go through all 11 of these, and I'm not going to read them through for you, but the concept is the same. We talk about the disadvantages and advantages and then a cost. And we want to get a cost because ultimately what we're going to try and do is see what people think from a favorability standpoint. So do you like all these? Do you not like these? What do you like more? What do you like less? Do you somewhat like them? Do you really not like them? That's favorability. Then after that, we're then going to go and ask them to rank them. And so if you could only pick one of these 11, which would you pick? And so it gives us two data points. Favorability is obviously, a lot of times people are like, yeah, you know, I kind of like all these. Based on the costs, do I really like them? And so we can gauge that. And then as you guys either decide we're going to go to a referendum or we're going to use existing funds to pay for these things, you now have data points from your community directly from them. And obviously, you're the board, you're the administration, you understand what the needs are. But bringing your community into this usually, especially from a referendum standpoint, gives you some great data. And it really involves the community because it really becomes their plan when they get some input into this. And so that's the whole process that we're trying to do. And so that's the potential individual projects. We also then ask for potential infrastructure solutions. Now, these are, in essence, taking what you have from individual projects and saying, okay, what do you think about different cost estimates? And so we would then get different costs. And then, obviously, you want to translate that into individual tax impacts. You want to say, okay, if you chose the additions and renovations, which would be, in essence, the middle option, let's say it's going to be $20 million, and an average impact, and I'm just making this up at the top of my head, quite honestly, is $100 a year on a home that's worth, and I don't know what your average home value would be, maybe $350 would be your average home value. And so we would put all that together so they have a little bit more data. If we chose, at a later point in time, we could really then dive down into what we would do as a potential second survey down the line, if that's, you know, something that you guys wanted to do, to really dive into, all right, here's three plans. And you know that in plan A, the low level plan would be certain different projects and cost structures. The middle one would have a little bit more, And as we talk about these, we say renovation versus additions and renovation versus a new library. This is very similar to what we did. We just ran the Roselle Library referendum, which was successful after a loss. What we would run here from a survey perspective is exactly the same as theirs, no difference. The same concept. The only difference is that they had an issue dealing with a village land swap with village property versus library property. So we wanted to see if people would be favorable to that. So that would be the only difference because you don't have that here. So that's how we would move forward. But once again, favorability versus ranking, that is things that we would show you. And here's the data that we would give you once we're done, obviously. We start the survey because the survey that we would do would be a phone survey. It is scientifically the best way to go engage and get data from your community. We start with demographic questions. So we ask, you know, like age, gender, ethnicity, your attachment to the library, things of that nature. And why do we do that? And sometimes that people get a little concerned. All right, well, why are you asking me these questions? We want to have the same demographics as your district, as the people that answer the surveys. So you wouldn't want to oversample people that have that come into the library a lot, because you know what, they know a lot about it and they want all the good, great things. Not everybody comes to the library, and so you want other people to have a say in what's going on there, and you don't want to oversample specific individuals. So seniors, you wouldn't want to oversample seniors versus people in their 20s and 30s, because if your community has 15% people in their 20s that are answering the survey or that are in the district, you wouldn't want to have your data have 30%. So then there's a difference. And your modeling, your weighting and modeling that we would do, so it's a professional survey, would be off. And so your margin of error would be way too high, and it wouldn't be scientific. And so that's how we kind of go through all these things.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
So these phones surveys, mm-hmm. Where are you gathering the phone numbers?
So phone numbers are going to be coming from your registered voters within the district itself. So not in the city of Bartlett, unless the city of Bartlett portion of the library district. So only the library district. We would hit cell phones, lots of cell phones. We would utilize texting to people that then they can take the survey at their leisure. The other reason why we like these surveys is that you're getting an intuitive response. You're not getting a lot of data. And unfortunately, when you think about the average voter, we'd love for everyone to understand exactly what's on their ballot and going in with the full knowledge of every candidate, every ballot preference, ballot initiative. That's just not how voters work. So these surveys really mirror how people and voters really respond and how they do things. And so that's really, we call it the intuitive response. You get a couple minutes. There'd be about 20 questions, roughly, maybe. Okay. Or is that too high for this?
Right.
Yeah. 15 to 20 questions. Yes.
So when we initially met with the company that was, you know, piloting this product architecture.
Yes,
product
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dan and Tiffany. We
there was a they had just done Schaumburg Library, which really went well, you know, and Schaumburg Library is very progressive, you know, and anyways, regardless. There was a matter of concern about the survey. Reason being is that we don't reach the students, okay? So that's why we felt it was good to do a mailer that comes to the house. And I will tell you, not everybody is going to have a phone to respond to you, and not everybody is going to pick up their phone and answer. Okay?
Sure.
This is ongoing through every town or village, okay? So they'll think it's a robocall or something. So I think there's a margin of error there. But my biggest concern is that we reach the students, and it was conveyed to them, I think I suggested so many words, that they consider reaching the school system, because the students are relying on the schools for some of the technology that we could also provide, that libraries are providing. And we're leaving out an integral part of advancing this library if we don't include the students. who may not have an actual record and phone number because they may be under their family member or they may not answer.
Sure.
So that's why we wanted to reach, you know, twofold, the schools and also the home, the family. I think a mailer is a lot easier. People can take a little time to answer it. And if there's a barcode on it, you can see who's responded and who hasn't. I also feel that people that utilize the library regularly, they enjoy coming here, but they also are looking for more. And those people are really strong advocates for the direction the library can go, because they're wanting more. They are going to other libraries. They're not just coming here. People are going to other libraries to get what they want. We want to hear from those people.
Sure. So there's different things that you can do to try and gain the knowledge. What you're talking about is the knowledge of what people might or might not do versus the voters that can tell you whether your referendum is going to win or lose. And so scientific versus non-scientific. I'm not saying it's bad data. Don't take this the wrong way. But you're not going to know who's actually filling those out. You're not going to know, did you oversample seniors that might give you a different understanding of what people want. As I said to begin with, we're going to know library utilization regularly, occasionally, rarely, or never. And so we can, based off of people's answers, we can tell you, you know, what portion of, you know, are they regularly here or not.
But the parents are filling it out, not the students that are seniors,
sure,
juniors, sophomores, or freshmen,
sure,
or junior high. Those students are not filling it out, and those are the crucial patrons that we need some feedback on to advance in the library.
Right. And there is ways to gather that data outside of the scientific area, because none of those, other than maybe a handful, are going to be voting in that election because they have to be 18 or above, or have to be 18 by the...
Voting in what election?
If you would... So we're talking a little bit more if you went to a referendum, that they're not the ones that would be making these decisions.
But they have a voice.
And so if you decide you're going to go to referendum, and if we were chosen to help you with that, what we would have is a website, and we would have similar information like this that we would put online, and that's where you can invite these students to come take the survey, talk about what they want. Obviously, that's beyond, if you're in the middle of a referendum, that's, you've already made the decision. But you could also do that now. You could help, you could start a website, and you could put this exact survey on your website, and then you can reach out to the schools, the teachers, and say, hey, could you have your students get online and take the survey? And
that's, I think you had mentioned a QR code that we internally as a marketing department,
sure, absolutely,
could use to get out to the
schools.
So
when we do our full engagement process, so we work with a unit of local government, whether it's a library, which we did with Roselle, we set up meetings, and then we ask these same questions at the meetings, and we give them a QR code, and they go on their phone and fill out the survey, or we hand them a paper copy if they don't want to do that. So all these things can be done. Our goal in this is to have a scientific survey that you can go to the population based on, you know, what our discussions were.
So a mailer comes in, survey comes in, the family opens it, and they look at it, and the mom or dad goes, you fill it out. Or they may say, oh, look at this. It says for the family and children, or, you know, everyone in the house, with the kids, what do you feel? Hey, what do you feel? And they're interacting with them. Not every family is going to do that.
Sure.
That's why we thought reaching, you know, a certain age group at the school system would help benefit as well.
Sure. So we can run any type of survey that you would like. We feel that what you're trying to do in the best cost-benefit analysis is this way. If you wanted to do a paper survey, we do paper surveys. You want to do live calling, we do live calling. We own our own polling company. So whatever you would like, we can do all of it. But the discussion and where we landed on this way to do it is what best matches the district, what best gives you the scientific value that you're looking for. But once again, you're not wrong at all. If you want a paper survey just to get information,
mm-hmm,
you can do that. It's just, is it oversampled by one group or another? That's not something we can guarantee or tell you one way or the other.
We have another question.
Sure.
Yeah. I'd have to question the, you know, having a phone survey. I know if someone called my cell phone and I don't recognize the number,
mm-hmm,
I would just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
I just think that's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been doing surveys across the nation for the better part of a decade. Our data has been pretty true. Our company's run 23 referendums. We have a 91% win rate. We raised $1.5 billion. It does work. And I don't discount what you say, because there will be people that will say, yeah, no, this is a robocall.
Just let it go.
I'm going to go.
But this is the first step. This is the very basic first step,
sure,
of reaching out to the community to find out what they like, what they don't like, what they want more of.
Correct.
Right? That's the very first step.
You had also stated that you would give us a phone number that we could use for people to call in and,
correct,
take the survey from their phone. So it's not necessarily even soliciting people. People can also,
absolutely,
come.
And not only that, what we would do is the morning the survey is going out, we would want you to send out an email. We would write that email for you to send out to whoever email contacts you have, that, hey, this is going to be going on. Please take the survey. We don't want to do it ahead of the survey starting, because we want to influence the sample size, or the people saying, oh, well, let's get all of our people to, you know, you might have someone that wants specifically something in the library. So we would start it the day of.
But you are isolating, in a sense, people that frequent the library. You don't want all of them, but all of them might be good resources for feedback.
And so if you just want knowledge, then yes, you can just do a paper survey. It'll cost you a lot more money than what we're charging you. If you just want information, if you want scientific information that you can use that will actually help you within the context of a referendum, the way we do this is much better, because you're going to, in essence, mimic what is happening in your community. And so that's really why this is a scientific survey, and why it's a much better process for anything you want to do to make decisions going forward that deals with a referendum.
But
if
it's
you
not
just
a life
want,
survey. It's not a life survey. It's just a voice survey. Robo's kind
it,
of
it is. It is. It is.
It's
like,
I think,
no, it's live to tape. I mean, it's someone's voice.
Someone's voice, and then you're hitting buttons to answer the questions.
Yeah. Is it AI?
I think if we're approaching this from the stand.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
It's a real voice.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't hear the distraction here.
But it's not live. It's not a live voice.
It's a recorded voice.
Right, okay.
It's recorded voice.
Okay.
I think if we're starting from the standpoint of looking what would pass in a referendum, we're two steps ahead of where we really should be. Fewer than 25% of our population actually has a library card in our community. We need to survey our population to find out what they would like and why, what would draw them into our library. What things are they finding in our communities, because they're not using us because we don't have what they're looking for. And, you know, to start from the standpoint of asking dollar amounts and what would they be interested in paying for, I think negates a lot of what we need to have as far as input from the community in order to understand what the community would like. I think once we've got that data, we can formulate something as a master plan that we can then take another survey looking, because we're going to know at that point what the cost options are. We're not at that point yet. You know, this board doesn't have anything as far as feedback even from our architects yet in terms of what it might look like, what the options are, etc. And I think that if we have community input, I mean, you know, we all have our own individual ideas, but there's seven of us here, and we've got a community of almost 38,000 people that we're serving. And seven of us don't have a community-wide knowledge base, and the library doesn't either, because we have a very low connection with our community by comparison to probably the Roselle Library. I don't know what their, but I'm sure it was over 25% of their community actually was involved.
Their data shows 34% regular utilization of the library.
So I'm not opposed to telephone surveys, but I think we're ahead of the game trying at this point to judge whether we could pass a referendum, and if so, what were the various components. I think we also have the problem that if you're using voter registration, typically, I think only about 60% of adults are registered voters, and so you've got a large population that you're still not going to reach.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So,
go ahead.
So to kind of put all this in perspective, if the idea is just to get information on what type of programming spaces or technology or things that you want to have, that's something you could do. You're at some point going to have to then come back and ask and ask the questions of money.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not
the difference with this is we're doing it two ways for you. The data is collected two ways. And that's when I talked about ranking versus favorability. And so we're going to ask the questions of these projects after you read this list. The question will be, you know, how do you feel about them? And so to your point, how do you feel about these? We're giving a cost estimate because it puts it a little bit more perspective on, ultimately, they're going to have to say, is that too much for me to spend, or what are my thoughts there? But then we do force people to rank them. And so then you're now knowing, all right, this is the top of the list. We always see, and when we do schools, accessibility is always favorable, one of the top three. But when you have to choose one of the 10, it falls off to the bottom, because then they're like, well, we really like these new classrooms or these other shiny objects or different things. And quite frankly, when we poll schools, only 25 to 30% of the people have kids in school. And so you're dealing with 70% of folks that don't have a connection. Or we actually find the people that are the most opposed to anything that happens in the library are people that had kids in the school system that are now through. And so it's just a data point more than anything else. And so the process that we're working at is a hybrid to get to where you want to be without having to spend $30,000, quite frankly. A survey like that is printing to who do you want it to go to? Do you want it to go to every registered voter, or do you want it to go to every household? And so 38,000 people, you're at least, you know, 12,000 households, 15,000 households, 10 to 12,000 households, printing costs, mailing back costs, aggregating that data, and then you're just going to have to come back to one of these once again. And so I think this gives you the best use of your tax dollars to get the most information that really is the best information from a scientific purpose. And that's why we recommend it.
What kind of a sample size would be valid?
You know, I'm a former elected official, and when I did polling for my races, if I had 150 to 200 responses, I thought that was valid. We'll get you under 5% or below MOE, so margin of error. Our hope would be over 200 in this size community. I think that we can do. We just did a survey that I have to talk about tonight for Geneva, and they got 500 responses, city of Geneva. So somewhere in that range, but anything 150 to 200 or above is scientifically valid, if you will. We would expect to get more than
that. Yeah, what would say that we went that way for that kind of data? What would the cost be?
The contract that is before you guys is $8,750, which is well below anybody that you could go to right now. And that's because we do this for a living. We have our own company. We're not contracting out to somebody. Whereas if you go to other companies, they'll be in the $20,000 for the same thing. Yes.
You had mentioned this is the first step. What are steps to come?
Well, I mean, we're getting you information. At that point, we can obviously once we do the survey, we'll come back with the results and give you our results and our recommendation on what the community believes. It's not us saying, here's our belief structure. It's what the community believes. And like I said, I like coming here. We know our process. We know how to go reach the community. I don't know your community. I know libraries. My mother was a librarian, a board member. They worked together. But I don't know your community. And so it's nice to have this discussion if we're going to move forward with this so you guys know, or maybe you have some intimate knowledge of your community that maybe we should be talking about that. And so this is our first draft of what we would talk about. And then obviously input from you guys would be great.
And we are planning to do a community meeting similar to how Dan and Tiffany came to the board meeting and then talk with the staff. We're planning to do a community meeting with Dan and Tiffany in relation to this community survey. So that would be going towards Trustee DeSmit's point of bringing in those like avid library users for them to have discussion and share those ideas. And going to another step.
And Dan and Tiffany know our work product. They were with us at Resilience, so they have a complete understanding of what we're going to ask for them in this. They've already gone through this before.
With the thought, you know, going to senior care homes, there's very avid voters that live in our community.
It's a good point, Trustee Boyer. I agree. People come out and vote when it's something that they want to support. So U46 has a referendum. People that don't maybe regularly vote, they're voting. So we do cater to different senior residencies. The library
sure.
does go there. So it would be very positive to reach communities like that and not pick 5 or 10 people in that building, but maybe more than that, all of them. Why can't we reach all of them? And then just getting back to the students, and I'll close on that, is that when the parents get the phone call or if it's a mailer, the students want to feel they're important too. So just an example, Schaumburg Library did their renovation and I was there for the opening. And I stood back and I watched how different cultural groups were coming into the library. And their comments were like, yeah, we have this at school, but we can't use it because the school's closed and we do this and we don't have this. And the students are giving feedback. The parents have no idea of any of this. So we're asking parents to respond to a survey where the students could have greater input. So even if they're not voters, they could be advocates for the progressive movement in the library towards, you know, to their family members.
And I would say is if you guys ever decided that this is the direction you're going with a referendum, I could hand you a sample education plan that you can work on that you would then have ambassadors that would go to those folks. And, like I said, we did this with Roselle. We put together a slide deck for them. They gave presentations. And so you either go to, and quite frankly, you can have this on your computer and you can invite teachers to give it to their students or go to the school and say, hey, can you put this out as an email to the students and invite them into that before you guys make a decision to go or after. I know you've been trying to
sort of answer the question about when we did mailers and stuff like that, there was a return rate. If you send out so many mailers, you get a sort of percentage back.
Sure, yeah.
And you kind of like talked about that, with kind of like the number of telephone calls you would be getting. Do you have a percentage rate? Did you figure 250, 500 or something?
So what would the return rate on us, do you have any of that?
Do you have a number?
We haven't really done a ton of the mail surveys. Our primary mode is this. When we're doing community engagement, that leads to referendum.
We do the online feedback.
Yeah, and we do online feedback forms.
Online survey.
Yeah, so if we were hired to run your entire program, your outreach program, we would take all this and put it online. Like I said, tonight I'm going to give a presentation where we had 158 online responses and 500 phone responses for the what would be the next survey. So yes, that's something that we would fully go through. This, we will call through until we get our numbers. We will text to calls. Some people like that. We'll send them a text. They'll read them like, oh, this is for the library. I'll take it. Sometimes we end up getting more responses that way because it's not a blank call, as you said, where you might not take it. And so we've really started instituting that because it's still the same data. It's just a different way of reaching people.
Exactly.
And it's trending as a better way to reach people because of exactly what you just said. But we do want to get landlines, we want to get cells, we want to get everyone across the board.
I guess another question I have is kind of like results. Do we get the raw results or how do you present
them? You can have both. We would give you this, and so this has the demographic area, the favorability, and the rank. But then you'll get a spreadsheet. So this will be the over, the top lines, if you will,
okay.
The summary. Think of a spreadsheet. We will then break it down by age. How did people under 44, 44 to 64, 50, 65 and older, how did they respond to these? How did your gender, male or female, respond to these? You'll have those that data broken down. Whether you share that with the public or not is completely up to you guys. We'll, you know, a lot of libraries or schools or whatever, because this is pretty standard of how we approach this, we'll just give them the top lines.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What other libraries have you done?
Just Roselle. Just Roselle.
So you've never done another library survey?
We have, I mean, the surveys are the surveys. It's pretty straightforward how we do this, whether we do it for a village like we're doing now or we do it for schools. The science behind it is really the same. We're just asking different questions. And obviously our first one we did was highly successful. Yes.
The survey, will it be clear that we want the opinion of everybody in the household rather than it comes to, you know, Mary Jones and she answers and that's it?
I mean, that
we want to know the whole household, what their opinions
are. We're not going to get that with the phone.
There is actually the potential you could, but you are somewhat correct. Let's say there's three voters to the household. We're going to call there. Someone's going to answer. Now, the likelihood is we could call that number two more times. Now, if male 60 years old answers this, and then we call again and male answers again, we're going to toss one of those because it's twice. We're going to be able to weed out multiple answers based on the demographics. But if male 65 answers and then female 21 answers, we know that we're going to pick up two separate voters within the household. And then on top of that, we're probably going to be able to get people through their cell phones as well.
I don't think you're going to hit the market that we want.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, if the choice is, as you move forward, you want to have this on your online, you can have that too. We're going to have a number that if people call in, you can say, hey, we're taking the survey. Or maybe you put a little landing page on your website to say, go ahead and take this survey. And we can differentiate online versus phone calls, obviously.
That might be more successful.
But our website's always under construction, and you can't get a landing page.
That's not true.
Because I get this
through
bar all the time.
That was for Larry's migration. It doesn't say that the website's
okay.
Out of construction.
So that's what I was wondering.
It's a system update.
That probably would be, that would reach more people.
And I think we had talked about that. So you're going to get your statistical data, which is really, really important, mm-hmm. from the demographics that we're trying to target. Then you were going to give us a QR code or a phone number, and our marketing department would push it out to senior centers, to the schools, to people who come to the library. We could set up a kiosk in the lobby, and people could do it that way. But you would still be able to differentiate between the statistical data and the favorable data.
Correct. And those are the ambassadors I talked about. If you have specific groups, you can go out to them and say, and hand them the QR code. You can copy it. You can start handing them out to people. If you have time, and you obviously have to have a phone, so maybe at the senior centers that might not be the best, but maybe someone can help them get online and work through that and answer the surveys. We will be able to differentiate that data from this data. Still valid, still getting you your opinion. From a wider source, but we don't want to call that scientific data.
You had quoted us, mentioned, $8,750. Could you once again just kind of give me what's all included in that?
Sure. The first part of anything we do is we have to, which we've already done, we've sat down and discussed kind of where the direction the library wants to go, what information they would like to try and glean. And so that's the first step. This is the second step, I should say. The meeting, which went about an hour, mm-hmm. to our team and your team to go through all this. it was made abundantly clear that your administration, that this board wants to be involved. And so would you please attend a meeting? So this was designed. That was step number two. You have it. Step number three is me coming to this meeting. We will then talk to your Dan and Tiffany and get the financial information, put this back together, send it to you guys so you'll see it and the breakdown. Obviously, if that means I need to come back to another meeting, then I will come back to another meeting. Once you have approval, or we're given approval, we will launch the survey. Once the survey is closed down with the appropriate number that we think is statistically viable, about a week, we usually call out about a week, five to seven days. We will take it about a week to analyze the data, put it in a format that is, like I said, this is page one. All the tabs will have all the data for you to, if you're a techie geek and you want to deep dive into the data, you'll have all the data in the world that will get you. And then from there, we can, have a discussion about what you want to do next.
Okay, so right now we're at the 8750, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Trustee Olson. Trustee Olson, I have a question for you.
Sure.
If we did a survey of this nature, could one of the questions, without biasing the survey, be, are you a current card holder, library card holder?
Yeah.
Because, again, my concern about reaching a broader portion of the community than we currently serve. And because we have people in this community that don't even know where our library is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why we couldn't add that. It's just 5 seconds more on the survey. And I don't think it would bias it.
I think that's a strong statement, though. I'm curious to see what the public has to say. So I like the statistical
data.
So
we don't have any way to validate that, but it's a statistic that, obviously if 10%, it comes back 10%, then that's maybe a statistic that is valuable to you.
Wouldn't you, and maybe you're not the person to ask, but across the state and the country, it's trending lower numbers, and people use the library differently. It may not be presence or checkouts, but it's digital uses or it's community gathering spaces where the statistics are different. So I just want that on the record.
Sure. And like I said, we saw that with Rosella and what they wanted to do and accomplish. It was a lot of the other things that you wouldn't traditionally from, we had the discussion about bookmobiles. I mean, that's not something you really see. Yeah. But that was how I got library stuff, because I went to a Catholic grade school that didn't have a library. Mm-hmm. And so the bookmobile.
And there are towns that have them.
I know. And I love it. It's great. I think it is a way to get young kids excited about the library. Mm-hmm. And that's why they did it to begin with.
So when you were speaking to Trustee Vaccaro, I know you had answered the question earlier, I think, with myself, is that when you make that call, if there's four people in that household, and you only get one out of the four, but there's a lot more contributors. We're missing that, and I really feel.
He said you would call. They would call back for
so,
the four.
So
people.
We will continue to call till we get a voter sample size that is statistically relevant. And so it might be that we hit that house once, only one person answers it, but that doesn't mean we're not getting sample size from the rest of the community. That household might get one out of four. It could get four out of four. I can't predict to you or.
Most households don't even have a landline. Let's just say 10% of Bartlett has a landline, the rest
sure.
is cell phones. Yeah. So you may not even reach the 5-year-old or the 10-year-old that could say, hey, mom, when we go to the library, I like this.
Sure.
Because there's no interaction with the parent and the children that are there. The last minute, the parent walks in the house, they're doing the survey, they're not thinking what their kid is crying for at the library. I'm just saying. I'm liking the mail in survey.
Yeah, in two separate ways to get data. One is statistically relevant. One is getting you information, and there's nothing wrong with that information. It's just not going to be statistically relevant for what you want to do moving forward. Should you choose to go to a referendum, those are the folks that you want to understand where they're at. And there's different ways that, you know, if we did a full engagement program, we collect data three different ways, from a community committee that of people that you would, like a facilities committee or something like that. They are what are called the informed data group. The informed data group is people, if you give them a lot of information and see how their ideas change over time versus what we're getting in from the phone survey is what's, the data point is called intuitive. You get a little bit of information, you got to make a decision. What's your intuitive reaction to what you just heard? So that's one data set. The third data set really is what we call a passionate data set. And so if you would put this survey online and someone would take the time out of their day to actually go online and do that, or if you had, say, a community meeting where you put out a presentation and asked them to take the survey, we call that the passionate data. You've taken time out of your day to either come here when you could be at home watching TV or hanging out with your kids and actually were interested enough to learn about that. And the passion could be good, the passion could be bad. We want to track both of those.
But right now, tonight.
But tonight, we're talking.
What we are here for is just to get this survey initiated. And so Dan and Tiffany are going to do our community reach out with our meetings. So we hired you to just get the base survey out to get a feeling, statistical data back from the community for a basis to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And we scientific, strong data that represents our district. So like Trustee Olson's saying, reaching the non-users as well as reaching people who do use the library, you're matching it to everybody in the community, and we're not being biased and trying to just get those passionate library users who are going to have all the ideas that they want for the library. I also disagree that parents don't know what their kids want out of the library.
I didn't
as a parent
say they didn't
myself.
Know. I didn't say they didn't know. I just said they could be walking in the door and answering the phone, and they're caught off guard, and their thoughts are one way.
But they could also be opening the mailer, and as a mom, I'm the one who opens up the mail at my house. I sit down, I take the survey. I'm not going to my husband about it. I'm not going anywhere else, so it's the same. It's kind of bias of like,
right?
You don't know who's taking the survey at the kitchen table by themselves, or if they're sitting around the kitchen table as a family taking the survey. You don't know if maybe the mom put the phone on speaker and said, hey, everybody, let's sit around and do this together.
The step down the line of when Dan and Tiffany engage your community, that's where you can have them put together this type of information, put it online, and if someone wants to be an ambassador to the schools, you can get the schools to push this. Hey, could you help us out? We'd really like to know what your students think. And so that's the secondary portion of where you can get the information. Not necessarily scientific, but it's going to give you information on what students think.
I think this is a nice luxury that we have available to us. Been part of a library system where we did not have this, where someone took qualitative data and broke that down. We went more the passion route.
True.
You know, unfortunately, that failed us. We did not pass that referendum. That library still needs construction to this day. Mm-hmm. It's really sad. So, I don't know. Give it a try.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you. No worries. And listen, we're always available. Obviously, they can reach me.
So
you have my card.
Just to make sure I understand from the board's perspective, we've hired this company, the contract signed. We're going to move forward with the initial survey and start the process.
Well, absolutely. Why would we stick to the
just making sure.
Maybe every
trustee needs to say something about it.
Well, I'm in favor.
Okay.
I'm in favor of it.
Yeah, I just make my
because we have to start someplace.
Sure.
And this is a good enough place as anything else. Other information can be gathered later.
Yeah, and the good thing is you have time.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to referendum in April.
Nope.
The next referendum is March of 26 or November 26. So you have plenty of time. You're starting early, which is a
she doesn't want to be president.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Trustee DeShmit, we kind of skipped over.
Yeah,
what you have
I'm
to say.
Fine with going ahead with it for a groundbreaking.
And I will be back. Obviously, I have to give you the report and findings. But if you need me to come back between now and then to discuss more, whatever you need.
Trustee, what's your name, Silas?
Yes.
What's your name?
So is this some sort of a purity test of whether we're going to go forward with something we already decided to
yes,
do?
Sir.
Yes,
sir. Because everybody has to have a say.
I am in favor of doing what we already agreed to do.
As well as I am.
Oh, I said what I needed to say.
Trustee Olson.
I'm sorry.
The question is, are you fine with going forward? Are you in favor of moving forward?
It's not a vote, sir.
We're just
getting a
Trustee DeSchmidt asked for everyone's opinion.
Oh. I'm not happy.
Neither's the Grinch.
All right, well, that's okay.
You personally have my card. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
As long as they go through you, I guess?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Yes,
thank you. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Our auditor should be here. Let me run out and grab her.
Trustee Olson, I'm aware that we weren't voting on it. Trustee DeSchmidt just asked for everyone to make an opinion. That was all.
Thank you. Welcome, Monica. Monica is from Lauterbach and Amen, and she is the primary individual who handled our 23-24 audit, and I just wanted to say thank you for working so closely with Sam and Mallory and Katie while I was gone, and I appreciate all the effort and time that you put into conducting our audit.
Of course. All right, so as Carolyn just mentioned, my name is Monica Adamski. I am the principal in charge of your audit. I'm here this evening to walk you through three pieces of required communications that are related to your audit. And I would like to give a special thanks to Carolyn and her team. Mallory, Sam were a huge help. I know Carolyn was out for most of it, but the girls did a great job. We got all of our requests in a timely manner. And an audit does require a great deal of additional time and burden placed on staff. I know you guys got AP and payroll. So us coming in is definitely a disruptor. So thanks to everybody on the finance team for getting us everything we needed in a timely manner. All right, the first thing I'll go over is the SAS 114 letter. The primary purpose of this letter was to let the board know whether or not we had any difficulties or disagreements working with management. So this is a separate letter outside of the audit report itself. So that letter will state that ultimately we had no disagreements or difficulties working with management. So that's one required piece of communication.
I apologize. I thought that was the...
That's not something that you typically... give a copy, but to the board, typically it's the audit report and the management letter comment, which is probably what you gave, which is good. That's fine. That is typically not something that that gets handed out like in this process.
Okay.
So you're completely fine.
No. I just gave him the bound copy. Okay.
Yep, and that's good.
Okay.
All right, the annual report itself. I see everybody has a copy. So on page one is the independent auditor's report. This letter states that management is responsible for the preparation and fair presentation of the financial statements, and then it's our duty as the auditors to generate an opinion. So I'm happy to report that the library did receive an unmodified opinion. That is the cleanest form and highest level of assurance that we can give that the financial statements are free of material misstatements and there's sound controls over financial reporting. So that means that we came in, we did our internal control testing, we didn't find anything that we thought we needed to disclose within the audit. So congratulations on that. On pages 4 through 10, this is the management discussion and analysis. This is a very high-level overview of everything that happened within the fiscal year. This is typically the section we suggest the board read. It's getting cold out there, fireplace, some hot chocolate. The audit is a fun thing to do on the weekends. So again, this just gives kind of a very high-level overview of what happened. It has charts and graphs, explanations from management in terms of changes within the fiscal year. So definitely recommend you read that. And then on page 18 is something I like to focus on. Ultimately, this is the fund level income statement, so what the library budgets for on an annual basis. So on page 18, you'll see for all the major funds, about halfway down the page, it says net change in fund balance. So as you'll see, all those numbers are positive. The library did have all positive net changes in all their major funds, so the general IMRF. You'll also see in total the non-major was all positive as well. So that's something to be proud of. All revenues exceeded expenses in those areas. Any questions on that? Not just to highlight again, ending fund balance for general fund was $3 million, so very healthy. Any questions on those numbers? All right. Following that is the notes to the financial statements. Again, this is just very specific detail on the numbers that you can see in the front. This has more investment information, where the library had investments. There's capital asset information, what you began with, any increases, any decreases within the fiscal year. Same on page 30, you'll see your ending long-term debt balances. And then your other supplementary information starts on page 50. So this is the same kind of information I just talked about, the major fund, but for the non-major, so that starts on page 56 and 57. You'll see all the net changes. Unemployment was the only one that was negative 5,000, and then all your ending fund balances there. All right, and then lastly is the management letter comment. The purpose of this letter is to convey any internal control recommendations, best practices. The library did receive no current year recommendations except for GASB pronouncements. There's a few coming due, but again, we'll work directly with Carolyn and the team to get those implemented. I did speak with the board president about some payroll approval process, if you guys wanted to speak as a whole on that to see if there's anything to change if needed. That's just something that was discussed as well. Questions, comments, or concerns?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Monica.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Safe travels.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. I can't believe it's Christmas time. All right, thank you for having me.
Yep.
Okay, bye.
Okay, and then the third item on the committee of the whole agenda is the board bylaws. I did send out the original version today. Trustee Olson had asked for a strike-through version. I do not do that. I never have, so what you have is what you get. I thought it was very clear. So it's open to discussion to the trustees as to what you would like to see changed, added, deleted, or recommendations.
Guys, start the conversation?
Certainly.
Okay. In Article 2, Section 5, Nomination of Officers, I've served on this board since 2013, and there's never been a nominating slate that I've been aware of or even brought forward at a board meeting in May after the election. It's always been, nominations have always been from the floor. And the second point, I believe that nominations from the floor are more transparent, rather than having a more or less an outgoing board dictate to an incoming board who their officers should be. I think the incoming board should make that decision without any input from the outgoing board. That's my personal feeling on that point.
I have a very strong opinion about nominating committee. And I voiced it almost a year and a half ago. It's been part of the board bylaws. It was ignored at the last election of officers. And we seem to have an attitude on this board that it doesn't make any difference what our bylaws are. we're just going to do whatever we want. There's no purpose of having bylaws if we're just going to run rampant and do anything.
And that's the reason why I'm saying we should delete that language about us having a slate of officers and just put in nomination should be from the floor. Like I say, it isn't just the last election, it's been the last six. Look, this will be coming up in the seventh election. I think the last six elections, the board has never. That's the thing with a board. The board can decide what it wants to do. It can ignore things, it can add things, it can do whatever. Basically, we want to bring the bylaws up to date to what the board is doing. And I understand Trustee Olson's position.
I have taken the time to look over a number of library boards' bylaws. There are, I think, 16 or 17 of them posted on the Rails website. And there are many things that, including nominating committees, that are in many of those bylaws. There are other things that I think this board should seriously consider. And most of the boards actually have standing committees. And they're still in our bylaws as they are, but for some reason, our president has refused to appoint members of those committees. And I don't think that's the purview of an individual of the board to make those decisions. We're all seven elected officials of this district. We all are equal in that regard. I think that we need to table the bylaws. I think we each individually need to take the time to understand what best practices are, and then come back as a group and work out the bylaws that we will operate from.
We tabled it in November for you to review it, to come back tonight. And we also reviewed these with the attorney. Bylaws can be changed. And you could do something different than the bylaws. The board has the right to say, okay, we're going to implement this now if they vote on it. And so we have done committees in the past, Joe, Trustee Olson, and if I remember correctly, we had a committee, but then every trustee was showing up to the committee, so it defeated the purpose of the committee, and it was wasting people's time. And I don't think we're large enough to have a building committee. We share everything with the board, that we are so transparent. Why would we need to meet a committee and then have it shared with the whole? I mean, Larry and I are doing our jobs. If there was a need or a special project came up, like we did go to referendum and we needed a building committee to plan the space things, that would be different. But right now, day-to-day operations are running smoothly and we don't need committees. And everything in the bylaws is a reflection of what we're doing and meeting per capita requirements, and the nomination process has worked. Why change something if it's working?
I'd also like to make a statement. That being that you were in the same class as I was, it was a Zoom class, but they were, I can never think of that one gentleman that he teaches a lot of these classes, and he said that most libraries, while some do have nominating committees, it isn't against the bylaws to not have nominating committees. And as Trustee Barry mentioned, it's very open if we do it from the floor. And it shouldn't be a problem if we're doing things from the floor, that everybody sees and hears it. People can't be accused of being liars or underhanded. It's open to everybody.
The nominating process of the last election was not open, because you declared that the first person nominated, we were going to vote on. And if they didn't get a majority, then...
Other people, we
That is not an open process.
It is an open process because we said to the floor, who wants to run for this position? Who wants to run for that position? Every position it was open for. I had also made the comment that other people had said to me they were interested in that position. But, and I know you will go back and listen, and you can certainly listen to hear that we opened that. Every single position was open to anybody else on the floor.
That's what I remember. And if you say, like, oh, I want to run for vice president, you're welcome to.
You're welcome to run.
It's not like Peggy has that for sure. It's an open floor position. That's how I remember the process.
Yeah, when we ran for treasurer, there were two people that ran for treasurer. And there was a vote on that. And the board decided it was going to be the treasurer. That's open. Might not like the results, but that's open.
I think that we need to take the time to look at the bylaws in depth.
Did you look at them a month ago?
Excuse me. One of the things that I saw in other libraries' bylaws that I thought made a lot of sense was that there was a responsibility assigned to the secretary of the board, because the functions of the board are the board's functions, that the secretary is responsible for ensuring that the notifications required under OMA are in fact carried out.
Madam President, this is a committee of the whole meeting, and we're supposed to update our bylaws. We can go through the bylaws. A thought came to me. Go through the bylaws, article by article. Approve, make a motion to approve Article 1. Make a motion to approve Article 2.
Except that we can't make a motion now. We would be bringing that to our regular meeting.
Right. And this, and so we don't repeat this over again. We can just put this over to our regular meeting.
Why don't you discuss it now? And then why don't you discuss it now?
So we can approve it.
So you can approve it at the regular meeting.
So let's start at the top then. I mean, this was tabled from last month. Certainly, I would think people had the time to read it all. And if questions came up. So
Article 1.
These bylaws constitute the bylaws of the Board of Library Trustees, known as the Board, of the Bartlett Public Library District, the District, and supersede all other bylaws of the Board. In the event these bylaws conflict with applicable statutes, the statutes control. Article 2, the method of election and lengths of term. Section 1, trustees are elected at the consolidated general election in April of odd number years. The Board, by resolution passed in 2021, reduced the trustees' terms from 6 years to 4 years, effective for the election to be held in April 2023 and thereafter.
I'm not sure why that even needs to be in the bylaws. I mean, the term is 4 years currently. And until we change it again, there's no reason to refer to history as that.
There's no harm in having it in there. I think it just validates.
It explains it's
yes,
changed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think you're looking at the old one. Hold on.
What?
I have that
one.
Hold on. You have that one too?
Yeah. Unless I'm baby
thinking. Hold on. I've got the draft 11/24.
I got the revised.
Revised 11/18/24.
I put, remove for the election to be held in April 2023 and thereafter, and just end the sentence with effective April 23 period on page 1 under section 1. So that was in my board law recommendations.
But
what we have.
But the term now is 4 years. That's,
right.
Yeah, period.
But there's nobody. Explains to people, somebody coming in, what happened in the past. It gives them some information so they can understand.
No, it's not the one that was sent today. It's not the one that you got sent this morning.
Yeah,
that was the old version.
We're reading the one you got sent today.
Yeah,
no, that's
that
not
one.
The one.
That's the old
read
version.
Read the one that's in your
packet.
Because it said draft, so that's why I put it over.
Okay.
Where should I be reading?
Which one are you talking about?
The one that's in your board packet.
Oh, okay, thank
sorry.
You.
No, the one that was sent this morning was because Trustee Olson requested to have the original bylaws. So those were the ones that are current.
That's fabulous.
I was like, I printed the board packet. I'm looking at the board.
Peggy, you were reading just perfect. I was following you just. No dispute.
So, Article 2, Method of Election and Election Length of Terms, we removed for the election to be held in April 23 and thereafter, and just end the sentence with effective April 23.
Just taking out that there.
And taking out that there.
I can't find it in the board packet. Is it? Wasn't it a separate email?
No. It's in the board. The updated bylaws are in the board packet.
And then the next section is vacancies.
In
what?
What page is it on?
I don't I got it. Okay. Because we got like three different
copies. So you know what page it's on.
Something
with
the bylaws.
So you can say what page it's on. You can tell us what page it's on.
Oh, 60-ish. I'm at 66.
So under Article 2, we discussed the Section 1, and then it says vacancies, and I added removal, because that was part of the per capita guidelines. Section 2, vacancy shall be declared when a trustee declines, fails, or is unable to serve, becomes a non-resident of the district, is convicted of a misdemeanor by failing, neglecting, or refusing to discharge any duty imposed upon him or her by this act, or has failed to pay the library taxes levied by the district. Absence without cause from all regular board meetings for a period of 1 year shall be a basis for declaring a vacancy. And then I have a trustee vacancy policy on the agenda tonight, and I put in approved by the board in December 2024. Vacancy shall be filled by appointment by the remaining trustees until the next regular library election, at which time a trustee shall be elected for the remainder of the unexpired term. And then we go to
Article 3,
Duties of the Board, Section 1. The duties of the board are to serve the district in accordance with district's mission statement, to economically and efficiently utilize public funds, to commit to quality public library services which benefit the general public, to formulate sound policies by which the district shall be governed. And then the last one, I added and terminate. So the sentence is to hire, evaluate, and terminate the library director. And that was the per capita requirement guidelines. Officers, Section 5, nomination of officers. I changed it to be the current method of what we're doing. Nomination for officers shall be from the floor at the May board meeting after the installation of new officers. Nominee shall consent to the nomination before a vote is taken.
This whole thing came about because in 2016, before I was on the board, people were placing sticky notes in front of all the trustees in terms of who they were to nominate for what two positions.
Okay, 2016. So we're trying to be more open?
Right.
You think that whether it was 2016 or 18 or 20, you don't think people still may say, geez, that person, like you for instance, you'd be a perfect person to be treasurer. Because you have the numbers, you know all of that, and that's wonderful. So people are going to hone in on who they really think could do a good job in that position. I mean, I would say, hey, don't vote for George Short because he's short. You know, I mean, honestly, Joe, people talk. You know people talk. But just because someone puts a note in front of me doesn't mean I have to go through with it. Give me $5 and I'll go in the election booth, but I don't have to vote for who you gave me the $5 for. That's the way it is. What you saw in 2016, do you really think that was who people voted for? And if it was, maybe it was because they felt that was the right person. I mean, really, is that your only beef about that? Because then this makes it very open. comment.
Do we want something in the bylaw that states that we contact the present chair on the board and let them know if there's a position we want?
But we did that last election, and that caused a problem.
Right.
Because that was said it was underhanded. So
right.
Isn't
so
it better to have it open?
Exactly.
No, I don't think you have to put everything in the bylaws.
Right.
And if someone doesn't like it, oh well, tough luck. I mean, the bylaws are supposed to be a general statement of what happens. And if I want to talk to a particular trustee or what I want or what I think would be a good idea, that she might be a good, that's, it's called the First Amendment.
Well, I guess the question, Trustee Bear, is what do you think the purpose of the bylaws are?
Purpose of the bylaws?
I mean, if it's going to be, let's roughshod over them and do whatever we want regardless of what
we've
reduced to paper.
That's exactly what a board can do. The bylaws don't have any enforcement policy in them. It doesn't say if you violate the bylaws, you lose your position. You don't get to vote on something. The bylaws are a guideline to what the board, what a particular board at a particular period of time thought was the best way to operate.
I don't argue with that. But if they're that ignored, which is what's happened here, then what's the purpose in having them at all?
Because first of all, we have a requirement to have them.
Yeah, it's per capita.
And I think it's for any just the good business sense to have them. Whether the board agrees with them, disagrees, uses them, don't use them, it's up to that particular board at that particular point.
And this is the only thing on the nominating committee is the only thing on here, and then the changing of the agenda that I changed, that, you know, just to make it more broad, because we're listing every single thing on the agenda. And sometimes it changes every month. So those are the two only major changes. Nothing else has changed. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to appease both sides, could there be a line added that says, should the current board choose, they are welcome to make a nominating committee? So if there is a whole new board.
No, there's no
then,
board. No.
Well, I'm just going to appease both sides. That is in the bylaws, so then if things change, then you don't have to change the bylaws. It's all covered under the bylaws.
We'll change them then.
Well, if sometime in the future, if another board, let's say 20 years from now, feels that 10 years from now, 5 years from now,
decides
they want to go in that, God bless them.
So, go ahead, John.
There's no better example than what the president gave us of how ginned up this repeated fake concern is. When we had terms, more or less decisions made ahead of time. Oh my God, conspiracy alert, they're out to get me. Now we do it openly. I don't like that either. Certain people, maybe one certain person on this board, just likes to have as much stuff written down that this individual can quibble with. It's meandering, relentless fashion. It doesn't matter what we put in. That will be wrong. Pick this one. Wrong. Pick that one. Wrong. This one. You're lying. This one. Corruption. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Don't mess up.
Trustee Schmidt?
Yeah, Director Wessel, could you read on Section 5 for nomination of officers, what did it say beforehand? Because I can't look back because I can't mirror image on moving. The reason I asked is because on Section 2 it states that they're elected every 2 years, so.
Well, that's wait. Officers. Hold on, let me find it.
Basically, what it says is that the April board meeting, there will be appointed by the president of the board.
Can I please read it verbatim?
Thank you.
Please.
Thanks.
At the regular meeting in April, the board shall elect nominating committee of 3 trustees whose terms are not expiring. One shall be appointed as the chairperson. The nominating committee shall present its recommendations at the May board meeting, listing the names of one or more trustee for each office, provided the consent of such nominee shall have been obtained. Additional nominations with the consent of nominees may be made from the floor.
So why can't we keep that? because Trustee Olson is saying that we are not following it the correct way by doing nominating committees. And since I've been here, okay, we have only done it from the floor.
Okay, so if you look underneath it, section two terms, I know it says serve 2-year terms in those offices. So when I read section five about the officers, it talks about this election and nomination to be taken in May, but yet it says that they're serving 2-year terms. So we're keeping them separate, right, for presentation-wise. Okay.
Okay, so terms, the president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer shall serve 2-year terms. No trustee shall hold more than one office at a time. And then section four, officer vacancy, I added removal. A vacancy in any office shall be filled by the board for the unexpired term. Per capita requirements. Section one, the officers of the board shall be a president, vice president, treasurer, and secretary. Officers shall be elected from among the trustees and shall serve until the next election of trustees and thereafter for 2-year terms until their successors are duly elected by the board. Section five, the president presides over all meetings. In the president's absence, the vice president presides. The president appoints members of the committees authorized by the district's regulations, ordinance, or other appropriate action. Section 6, Vice President. The Vice President, in the absence of the President, shall perform all of the duties of the President. Section 7, the Treasurer, and I added Library Director because the Treasurer oversees everything, but I am the one that is doing the day-to-day operations.
Yes, I'd like to suggest that if we're going to have and Director, because this applies to the Board, not the staff, that it's a library director, comma, as staff, period. Because I think there needs to be a clear delineation between the board and the employee of the board.
I think that's a given as the library director.
The trustees are... the officers are set out who they are in the bylaws. And the library director is mentioned as kind of like as staff is surplus.
Right.
Surplus. Why? Doesn't change their roles in any way.
So the treasurer and library director shall keep and maintain the accounts and records of the district. So basically the library director does all the work and then runs everything past the treasurer when the BA and BNA and all that stuff. So the normal depository of all financial records shall be the library. An audit shall be conducted each fiscal year and a report filed with the board according to statutory requirements. The treasurer shall give bond to the district to faithfully discharge the duties of the office and to account to the district for all district funds. The bond shall be in an amount with sureties approved by the board. The cost, and I changed the surety bond to a treasurer's bond because that's what we have in our insurance, shall be borne by the district. Any person or entity or public body or agency having district funds, property, or records in their possession shall, upon demand by any trustee, transfer and release all such to the treasurer. In the absence of the treasurer, when the treasurer is unable to serve, the president or vice president may perform the duties of the treasurer. Secretary. The secretary and the library director, I add the library director because not once in the 12 years that I have been here, has any secretary ever wanted to do the minutes?
If you want to.
You can. If you want to, we will gladly turn the minutes over to the secretary.
Put it back in April.
The secretary and library director shall keep accurate records during the secretary's term of office. The records shall include a record of the minutes of all meetings, the names of those in attendance, the ordinance enacted, the resolutions and regulations adopted, and all other pertinent matters affecting the operation of the district. And going forward, we would like to get back onto that trend of having it not be verbatim because it's supposed to be a summary of the meeting. Ethics advisor. The president, with the advice and consent of the board, shall designate a trustee to serve as ethics advisor for the district. The ethics advisor shall provide guidance to trustees if a complaint is directed at a trustee. If a complaint is directed at the ethics advisor, the board president will provide guidance to the trustees.
It is to review this.
It is kind of silly, but we're doing it. Freedom of Information Act, FOIA officer. The president, with the advice and consent of the board, shall designate a trustee and the library director, because I'm doing all of the FOIA requests, to serve as the FOIA officer for the district. The library director shall handle all FOIA requests, respond accordingly, and inform the trustee FOIA officer of the request. Article 5, meetings and procedures. Regular meetings of the board shall be held at the library on the third Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Section 2, an agenda for each meeting shall be prepared by the library director and reviewed by the board president and shall be included with notice of the meeting. Trustees who request items to be included on the agenda should notify the library director or the board president at least 1 week in advance of the meeting. And then in the last one, it had
a whole list
of every single thing that you could possibly have on an agenda. And we talked to Roger Ritzman, our library attorney, and he said, you don't need to do that. You can put a statement that says, generally, the agenda shall set forth the general subject matter of any resolution or ordinance that will be subject to final action at the meeting and may and include any other items that the board plans to act on or are taking final action on.
Carolyn, can I interrupt?
Yep.
Can we go back for a moment to Freedom of Information officer? This is something required under state law, correct?
I believe so.
No. I mean, that a board member be.
Not that the library,
I think the state law says library must have a designated FOIA officer. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say anything about board members.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I question whether this even needs to be in the bylaws.
That's an interesting point because I believe at the Park District they appointed the director to be the FOIA officer.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I was at one of their main meetings. I just overheard that.
In the trustee handbook, it states the library director is currently the FOIA officer. We've been reviewing those documents, it does state that, and it makes sense because any FOIA request that would need to be answered, the board does not have access to that information.
And the particular FOIA officer might not be available to answer that question, or we've added another step.
I honestly think, if I remember correctly, it came up because everybody needed a title at one point.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Even if I didn't specifically remember it, I guarantee that happened. Yes.
I don't mind having a trustee be the FOIA officer.
All you're doing is informing that person of a FOIA request.
I believe the FOIA officer had their stiffest test in this board at a little different constitution because there was a big fan of FOIAs. No longer attends as a citizen. So that's kind of settled down a little bit in the last 6+ years.
So I'm okay with leaving it in or taking it out. Section 3, where are we at?
Article 5, meetings and procedures.
We just did that.
So the agenda.
Special meetings.
Special meetings of the board may be called by the president or secretary or by any four trustees. And then we added at any time with as much notice as possible. And this was came up because of the September meeting and talking to the library attorney. If there was a flood or the building flooded and we had to call a meeting and we have to hold a meeting if there's an emergency. So it's as soon as possible. Trustee 4, or Section 4, quorum. A quorum consists of four trustees. Majority of trustees shall a majority of trustees present shall determine the vote taken on any questions unless a larger majority is specified by statute or ordinance. Manner of vote. All votes on any questions shall be ayes or nays, yes or noes, recorded by the secretary, and I added library director. Absentees and abstentions from votes shall be noted but shall not be counted for or against a question. Section 6, Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order, most recent edition, govern all questions of procedures not addressed herein or state not stated in applicable statutes. Attendance at meetings by electronic means. A trustee shall be considered present at a public meeting if attendance at the meeting is via any electronic means, which allows a trustee to hear the proceedings of the meeting and be heard by those physically present at the meeting. Attendance at a public meeting through electronic means is allowed at board meetings and committee meetings following the provisions of the Illinois compiled statutes. The absent trustee should state publicly via electronic means the reason for not being present at the time of roll call. The absent trustee should notify the board secretary of the expected absence and the reasons for the absence at least 48 hours before the start of the meeting. If the absent trustee is the president, the vice president will preside. A trustee present through electronic means should clearly identify himself or herself each time he or she speaks. My only recommendation is after board secretary would be to put library director and keep it consistent with everything else. Section 8, electronic devices at meetings. Trustees may not communicate electronically during a meeting. Trustees may, however, place electronic devices on the table in order to be notified of emergencies. 9, conflict.
Excuse me, wait a minute. I have a device, electronic device here I use to my hearing aids, not just be notified from a message.
Say medical device or something.
Maybe this will board supersede the bylaws we talked about.
But we just take it out.
Take out that last sentence and just leave. Yeah. May not communicate electronically during your meeting because the rest of it is procedural, not policy. Okay.
Conflict of interest. Any conflict of interest on the part of any trustee shall be closed to the board when the interest becomes a matter of board action. Any trustee having a conflict of interest shall not vote or use his personal influence on the matter and shall not be counted in determining the quorum for the meeting for that vote. The minutes of the meeting shall reflect that a disclosure was made, the absenteeism from voting, and the quorum situation.
Abstention.
All trustees shall be advised of this policy upon assuming office. Section 10, Open Meetings Act. The Open Meetings Act applies to all meetings as defined in the Open Meetings Act. Section 11, Minutes. Minutes shall include but need not be limited to the date and time and place of the meeting. Trustees recorded as either present or absent, and whether trustees were physically present or present by means of video or audio conference, and a summary of discussion on all matters proposed, deliberated, or decided, and a record of any votes taken. We could say that we're technically not following the minutes because we're doing them verbatim.
Transcription.
Committees, standing and special committees. Standing and special committees shall be appointed by the president. Standing committees shall serve for two, for shall serve, and then that's where Peggy had sent me about taking out for serve, for two fiscal years. Special committees shall serve until completion of the work for which they were appointed. All committees shall be comprised of the board president, when necessary, one or two trustees, and the library director. Designated staff and or vendors may be appointed to a standing committee, and their duties are as follows.
Excuse me, Carolyn, mm-hmm. Where it says Article 6, mm-hmm. There's an extra I in there at the end of Article.
Particularly.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe she was feeling French.
All right. Section 2, Building Committee. With assistance of staff, inspect the library facility and property annually to determine necessary improvements. Submit to a board a prioritized list of building projects that need to be addressed. Submit recommendations to the Finance Committee regarding funds needed for building improvements. Section 3, Finance Committee. Review financial procedures and policies and make recommendations to the board as needed. Assist library director with preparing an annual budget. Make recommendations to the board for any adjustments that need to be made to the budget. Review the annual audit and address any comments made by auditors. Create and implement a plan that will help eliminate any outstanding deficits. Section 4, Policy Committee. Review all district policies on a rotating three-year basis. Make recommendations regarding additions or changes to existing policies. Create and implement new policies as needed. Eliminate policies no longer in effect. Review the personal handbook every 3 years. And then Article 7 is financial support. Financial support may be provided to trustees for membership in Illinois Library Association and for expenses for attending appropriate meetings and events. Article 8, Library Director. The board shall appoint the library director. The library director is responsible for administration of district policies and supervision of district operations. Article 9, Amendments and Review. Amendments to these bylaws may be proposed at any regular meeting of the board and shall be effective as determined by the board. The board will endeavor to review these bylaws every 3 years.
Any more discussion, even though we're running long?
It's on the agenda.
It's on the agenda, so.
I make a motion we adjourn.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Trustee Barry.
Yes.
Recaro.
Yes.
DeSmet.
Yes.
Sias, yes. Olson.
Yes.
Boyer.
Yes.
Daney.
Yes. We'll take a 5.5 to 8 minute recess.